that pledge. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Mejor Communities, a nonprofit organization that strives to bring people in rural communities in Peru better lives by providing them with education and resources, is hosting a fundraiser tomorrow night, Friday, April 8th. All the profits for this event will go to their program in Pachachaca, Peru, in 2012. The event is called Viva Peru Salsa Night, a night of salsa, dancing, karaoke, raffles, and light refreshments and salsa lessons. It takes place at the Grand, on the corner of Southeast Belmont and Grand, on April 8th, from 6 p.m. until as late as you can keep up dancing. So, again, that's a Mejor Communities, a nonprofit organization, is having a fundraiser, and that's tomorrow night at the Grand. It's a fundraiser for Pachachaca, Peru, in 2012. And it's Viva Peru Salsa Night, a night of salsa, dancing, karaoke, raffles, and light refreshments, and salsa lessons. It sounds like fun. And here's some traditional music from Peru, just to tide you over for a minute. And you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on Between the Covers, a guest is Portland writer Lydia Yaknevich, author of the new memoir, The Chronology of Water. At 11, Emma Jackson Ford, Patricia Welch, and O.B. Hill host Black Book Talk, focusing on books by Black authors. And thanks, KBOO members, for your support. If you're not a KBOO member, you could become one right now by going to kboo.fm, that's kboo.fm, and clicking on the tip jar. It's up there in the corner. So be sure to do that. Again, we're going to have a little bit of music to fill in the time until Between the Covers comes on and author Lydia Yaknevich. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Well, we've got a change of plans here. We'd like to apologize. We will not be having Lydia Yuknevich, author of the new memoir, The Chronology of Water, on today, perhaps another time. Instead, we will hear Rhys Bowen. Rhys Bowen, author of Royal Flush, a satire and mystery set in 1930s London and Scotland. The interview is done by Ed Goldberg. Stay tuned.
My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Rhys Bowen. Rhys, welcome to K-Boone. Welcome to Portland.
Thanks very much, Ed. It's good to be here.
Let me read a little bit about you here. Rhys Bowen was born and grew up in England and went to school and college in England, Austria, and Germany. After completing her degree, Rhys went to work with the BBC in London. Can you do the BBC voice?
I can indeed. This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Thank you. I like that. And you found your niche in the drama department. Mm-hmm. I always say if you find your niche, you should scratch it. Working on so many fine plays inspired you to write your own. Dandelion Hours was your first published play. Actually, it was produced.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
But now you live in San Francisco or thereabouts.
Marin County, just
in
north.
Marin County. Yeah. And you've been there since 1966, so you were there then.
I was in the summer of love sort of time, yes.
Did you participate?
No, not really, no.
Alas, okay. You've written children's books. Mm-hmm. You've written young adult books, adult historical romances, and sagas.
Yes.
And now you're doing mysteries. Why did you start writing mysteries?
I got to a stage when I felt I'd said everything I wanted to for teenagers. You know, I'd done a breaking up and getting together again and going to proms and not going to proms. And finally, I thought, why am I not writing what I like to read? I've always been a huge mystery fan. It's always been the things I've read. And what really hooked me, I think, was when I discovered Tony Hillerman. Until then, I'd read mysteries as the puzzle. And when I read Tony Hillerman, he takes you to another time and place. And it was just so fascinating to me that he can look into the insights into the Navajo, etc. And I thought, that's what I want to write. So I started, and the first mysteries I wrote were set in Wales. That's my mother's country. And I'd spent a lot of time there as a child. And the Welsh are very different from the English. So it was great to sort of bring out the Welsh characteristics and things in a book. And so the first mysteries I wrote were set there about a Welsh policeman. And then after that, I moved on to I wanted to write a feisty first-person female. And I visited Ellis Island. And Ellis Island was completely moving for me. I had no idea it was going to be like that. I thought it was one of those places you know about and you've read about it. When I got there, I could just feel all the emotion that was there. And I thought, I have to put this in a book.
Listen, I've been remiss because I haven't given the title of your book. It's called Royal Flush.
Yes.
That's the title.
Yeah.
Rhys Bowen's first name spelled R-H-Y-S.
Yes.
B-O-W-E-N.
Yes.
I've been saying Bowens. It's actually Bowen. And yeah. Berkeley Prime Crime is the publisher.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been to Angel Island in California?
I have, yes. Yeah.
That's the roughly
it is similar for the Chinese people. It was their immigration station.
A lot rougher for them, though, for my ancestors that came through Ellis.
Yeah.
This book is set in the 1930s in England and Scotland.
Yes.
And your character, who I'll call Georgie, you can give her whole name if you want to.
Yes, she's really Lady Victoria Georgiana Charlotte Eugenie, and she's 34th in line to the throne, and she's completely penniless.
I have that right there, number 34.
Yeah.
And even being 34th in line to the throne, she has privileges ascribed to her at birth that most English will never understand. Oh, they understand it, but they'll never attain to.
No, I mean, that's why I wanted her in a difficult situation, you know, in that she can't go and get a job at Woolworths, even if there were jobs available. It's the Great Depression. So she has to behave like a member of royalty, but without being given the means to do so. She's too far from the throne to get any sort of government stipend. And really, the only thing open to her is going to be a companion to a dreadful elderly relative, or to marrying into one of the royal houses of Europe and thus cementing some ties somewhere.
Let me start with this. The idea of impoverished nobility is we hear about this. This is something which mystifies us in this country. I mean, if you're nobility, then you should have some money, right? But in fact, there's a lot of impoverished nobility.
Well, especially in England, after they started implementing death duties, you know, the estate taxes on an estate. And every time someone dies, then they assess the value of that estate in the land, and then they make you pay duties on it. So some these poor people are hit with several millions. Well, they don't have the cash. You know, they're land rich, cash poor. And they have to sell off part of the estate to pay those duties. And there are plenty of people. These days, they do things to raise money to keep their estates going.
Taking tourists.
Yeah, taking tourists, have a zoo on the estate, a fun fair, a weapons museum, whatever will bring in some people. And, you know, that's what you have to do. When you think those houses were built to be run by teams of servants. And these days you can't afford teams of servants, so if you want to keep them going at all. And they're impossible to heat, they're impossible to do anything with, they're always needing renovation. So it's a very expensive business to keep one. And yet if they've been in the family since 1700, you want to keep it.
No indoor plumbing, damp, cold, feel every breeze that comes through. And in Scotland, that's quite considerable. Oh,
they were definitely howling gales, yeah.
And fireplaces that are big enough to roast an entire stag in. But which take an enormous amount of wood just to keep one room warm.
Yeah, yeah. My sister-in-law actually has a fireplace like that. She has a fireplace that about four people can stand in.
Yeah. I hope not while the fire's
going. Not while the fire's going, no. Okay.
Besides being a mystery, this is what I would call a satire of manners, for want of a better terminology.
I think so. I mean, it's partly, I think, comedy of manners, and I think partly just lighthearted spoof, too. It is P.G. Woodhouse, really, with bodies.
I have that written down. Woodhouse, yes. Yes, it's very Woodhouse-y. Yeah. The common people are smarter and more level-headed, and the higher you go up the chain, it seems the more twit-like you become.
Well, I mean, that's fairly true, you know.
Too much inbreeding, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have to realize that even today, the British aristocracy, they really think that God made them and then he rested, and that everybody else is on earth for their purposes. And they do say the silliest things. And I married into one of these families, so I can sit there and listen to people say ridiculous things and think, oh, that will sound good in the book. You know, they say things like, well, when you go abroad, you know, nobody knows how to make a decent cup of tea. That's why they're all so pasty-faced, you know.
You know, I've heard that. Yeah. can't you make a good cup of tea in this country?
Yeah.
What's wrong with Lipton's?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything is wrong with it. We just don't know. We don't care much. The thing about Georgia is that she's pretty grounded because she has a side of her family which is not from the aristocracy.
Yes.
And she has a mother who's a former actress, film star.
Yes.
And is a bit flighty, can we say that?
Well, I think, yes, she's, more than flighty. I think she's what in those days they termed a bolter. She moves, she fled from her first husband and then has gone to a series of men ever since, you know, and putting on more makeup to try and keep her youthful looks as she gets older. But she's amassed large amounts of money doing this. She always goes to rich men. Rich and famous and dangerous is what the men she goes to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This reminds me of that Rodgers and Hart song about To Keep My Love Alive, about a serial widow.
A
serial black widow. She keeps killing off her lovers.
Well, when
this book starts, Georgie is destitute and has no idea what to do for a job because there are no jobs because you just say it's the Depression.
Yeah.
So she thinks what a great idea would be to have young ladies who would escort people to restaurants and sit there and be witty and charming and just be a kind of a date. How would you call it? Just a temporary date.
Yes, an attractive companion.
Precisely. Yeah. And, oh, yeah, you wrote it, of course. but it's misconstrued. Can you tell us about that?
Well, her friend Belinda, she has a very naughty friend who seems to always land on her feet. And Belinda asks her to take her place with a visiting American gentleman who's come to London on business, knows nobody, and hates to dine alone. And so all Belinda is going to do is go to have dinner with him. So a light bulb goes off in Georgie's head. And she thinks, well, this is wonderful. I could actually set up a service to provide these lovely companions for people. So the mistake she makes is that in her advertisement, she uses the word escort service and high-class girls.